We're continuing on in our study of Parshat Vayitzeh. Last time we discussed the powerful concept of Avanim, that they are continuous, that they are eternal, that they present an Av-Bain relationship, and that Yaakov Avinu is going out to Charan, is going out to Golus, and in the context of that Golus, he's going to be building the foundation stones of Klal Yisrael and the Shvatim. And as I mentioned at the end of last time, now we're going to get into the fact that things aren't going to be so simple. Right? We gave all of the beautiful picture of 12 stones, foundations, building blocks, that Yaakov is the spine, and the 12 ribs that come around it, just like the 12 shvatim that are going to surround and protect the heart and soul of the world, which is the Mishkan and eventually the Beit HaMikdash. That's the ideal. But the process to get there is always going to be more complicated. And there is, in fact, one very specific individual who makes it his business to try to make that as complicated as possible, who presents the challenge in the context of building up Klal Yisrael in the context of our parsha. Who is that individual? Who is the impediment, is the adversary on the journey to create the Avanim, the foundation stones of the Shvatim in Klal Yisrael? Lavan. How do you know that? Either because you read the parsha or because you looked at the top of the sheet. One of the two. Good, that's the only giveaway you're going to get. Good, so Lavan is definitely the answer. Again, if you read the parsha, Lavan is the adversary in the parsha. And he is the impediment along the way. So much so, while we're familiar with this actually from the Haggadah of Pesach, we quote from Pesukim and Devarim that make a reference to Lavan. If you take a look in source number one, Devarim Perek Chavav, it's in the context of the bringing of Bikurim, which is a conversation for another time. But in that context, it says, "Vani tavarti l'fnei Hashem elokecha," that when you bring the Bikurim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're going to make this grand declaration about the history of the Jewish people, which starts with the following words, "Arami oved avi vayered mitzrayma." An Armenian tried to destroy my father. And those of us who have read the Haggadah know that the Arami oved avi is a reference to whom? Lavan, also if you looked at the top of the page. I was wrong, you had one more freebie, right? That's also a reference to Lavan. Who is this Armenian? Who is this Arami? I quoted Rashi instead of moving to the Haggadah, but quoting Rashi. Source number two. Maskir chasei makom Arami oved avi Lavan bikesh la'akor et hakol. Lavan tried to uproot everything. Now, in the context of this pasuk, and certainly in the context of the Pesach Haggadah, who is Lavan therefore being contrasted with? Pesach Haggadah being the obvious giveaway. Moshe didn't try to destroy anything. If nobody gets this, we have to do a hard stop. Maybe get up and I'll walk out of the room. You guys can all do some jumping jacks and get your acts together. Who is thank you? Right? Pesach is coming in like a month and a half. Villain of Pesach is Paro. The contrast here is between Lavan and Paro. Everybody at least realized, yeah, at least I appreciate that one or two of you put a book in front of your face to at least hide your embarrassment. Okay, right? Okay? Lavan is here being contrasted to Paro. What did Paro decree? Kill all the firstborn males, have them thrown into the river, terrible slavery and servitude, just like Lavan, right? No, thank you. Okay, so people are starting to recognize that we need to be awake and focused and know what's going on. Good. The answer is no. Right, what kind of comparison is that? And in the Haggadah, all of the Mefarshei Haggadah will have to deal with that. Either who is this Arami, which we can assume, most of the Mefarshim are going to assume is Lavan. But contrast to Vayirat Mitzrayma, Vayagar Sham B'Tema'at, V'Yisham L'Goy Gadol Atzumar V'Chulei, all of the things that went down in Mitzrayim with Paro, the terrible things that happened in the context of Mitzrayim, what did Lavan do? No, Lavan tried to uproot everything. Paro tried to kill the males. Lavan tried to uproot everything. He's much worse. Where do we see that? You read this parsha, our parsha, Parsha Vayitzeh, the primary parsha of Lavan. So the Mefarshim point out that he's an Arami, Otiot Ramai, that he was a trickster, that he was underhanded. We know that he was a trickster and he was underhanded. Yaakov in the parsha says he tried to move around my wages 100 times, and every time he tried to trick me, and I was able to overcome. He tricked him with switching around Rachel and Leah. He tricked him around with his wages. He was always messing with him. True. You're going to equate that with throwing babies in the Nile? With terrible servitude in Egypt? What was the evil of Lavan? What was the struggle against Lavan? What was going on with Lavan? So the first thing that Lavan does seem to have lasting implications. What's the first trick, which we already mentioned, that Lavan pulls on Yaakov? Switching the daughters. Switching Leah for Rachel. Eventually leading to what, therefore?
7 more years.
7 more years of working for Lavan, true. But eventually, just practically speaking, does he then marry Leah, have 12 tribes with Leah, and everything is good? What happens? Well, so we'll get there in a minute, right? Don't pull so hard back on the winter meter show. You got a preview. But he marries both Rachel and Leah. He marries two sisters. Now watch how this already plays out in the Gemara. Fascinating Gemara. Rabbi Ravamas actually quotes this pretty much consistently in different places throughout the Bereishit Shirim. I don't think we've quoted this Gemara as many times as he's quoted it in his Shirim. But I thought this was a good time to bring it in because this really drives home the point. The Gemara in source number 3 in Masechta Pesachim talks about this glorious banquet at the end of days. And at the end of days, when this banquet happens, at the end of the banquet, what needs to take place? What's going to conclude the Se'udah?
Benching
Birkat HaMazon. And so you need somebody to lead the Zimun. So we're going to start at the beginning. Who are we going to start with to offer up the Zimun? Who started Judaism Bichlal?
Avram.
He says, Avram, you lead the Zimun. And Avram says, no, I can't lead the Zimun. Why can't Avram lead the Zimun? He says, what came for me that I can't lead the Zimun?
Yishmael.
I had Yishmael, I can't lead the Zimun. He says, okay. Yitzchak, you lead the Zimun. And it says, no, I can't lead the Zimun. Why can't Yitzchak lead the Zimun? I had Esav. He says, okay, fine. Yitzchak, you had Esav. Yaakov, you had the 12 Shvatim. Yaakov, you lead the Zimun. Underline in source number 3. Amar lo Yaakov. Tol varechi. Tell Yaakov, go and bench. Amar lahem, they say. Eni mevarech. I can't bench. Shenasati shte achayot v'chayehen shatida Torah v'osran alai. Because I married two sisters and in the future that would become us. There was no Torah yet, he didn't do anything wrong, and it's complicated. What does it mean that the Avo did or did not keep all of the Torah, and what happens if they were over a mitzvah in the Torah that wasn't given yet? Not our sugya. But we see that there was something so fundamentally problematic about his marrying two sisters that it was equivalent to Yaakov saying, to Avram saying, I can't lead the Zimun because I produced Yishmael, and we talked about last semester the terrible ramifications of Yishmael's presence in the world. We talked about last semester the terrible ramifications of Esav's presence in the world. And Yaakov says, I can't lead benching because I married two sisters. Who was the one who facilitated the marriage of those two sisters?
Lavan.
So something very problematic here. Something that cuts to the core. In a way that's almost is being presented somehow even similar to the problematic historical ramifications of Yishmael or of Esav. What's so problematic about marrying two sisters? What was so impactful to Yaakov in having him marry, in love and tricking him into marrying both Rachel and Leah? Well, let's take a look at the story. Let's actually leave the Pesukim inside. You can open up in your Chumashim into our parsha, or take a look at source number 4 in your source sheets. We're in our parsha, Pasuk Perek Chavtet, Pasuk Chavtet. Vayas Yaakov Kain, Vayimalesh, Vua, Zot, Vayitain lo et Rachel bitolo l'isha. So he married Leah, and then he was given Rachel as well as a wife. Vayitain Lavan the Rachel Bito Bilha Shivchato La Lishivchan, and Lavan gives Rachel Bilha as a Shivcha. Vayavo Gam El Rachel. And then Yaakov comes and joins together with Rachel. Vayehav Gam et Rachel Milea. How would you translate that? Vayehov Gam Rachel Milea. Well, there's two contradictory implications there. What were you saying? Which one were you honing in on? that there was a love there. Just like he loved Leah, so too did he love Rachel. Gam, he also loved her. However, what letter did you skip over? Louder. Me, Leah. He loved her more than Leah. From the moment that Rachel walks into that tent, 7 days after he marries Leah, already there is a clear distinction between the two, Vayehov et Rachel, mi Leah. Continuing on in the Pesukim, Vayavod imo od sheva shnim achirot, and then he worked another 7 years for Rachel, as one of you mentioned before. Okay, so there's a little bit of an imbalance here. That's to be expected. Maybe they'll get over it, maybe it'll get better. They'll go to, right, new definition of couples counseling with a stronger S at the end, right? Right? Try couple counseling, they'll figure it out, everything will be okay. But we go to the next pasuk. Vayar Hashem ki snu'a Leah. God sees that what is Leah? She's hated. Wow, that escalated quickly. Right? God sees that Leah is suddenly hated. That's a very strong word. We're not longer Rachel mi Leah. Ki snu'a Leah. He hates her. And as a response to that, Vayiftach et Rachma, he opens up her womb, Rachel akara, and Rachel doesn't produce children. Escalated very, very quickly. And we have a first of what will be many problematic words to put on the board, which is sinha, producing a reality of hate. And then we go through and they start producing children. Vatar Leah Vatiled Bain. Leah has her first child, Vatikrashmo Reuven, and she calls him Reuven. Ki Amra, she says, Ki Ra'a Hashem Bi'onyi. Because God saw my pain and my suffering. Ki Ata Yevani Ishi, and now maybe my husband will love me. Vatar O Vatiled Bain. She has another child, Vatomer. Ki Shma Hashem Ki Snu'a Anochi. God heard that I am hated. Vayitzen li gam et zeh, so he gave me another child, Vatikrat Shemo Shimon. It's a painful story. Vatar od vatilad vein, she has another child, a third one. Vatomer ata hapam yilaveh yishi elai. Maybe now my husband will escort me, will join with me. Ki yaladati lo shel shabanim, because I gave him 3 sons. Al kein kra shmo Levi. Vatar od vatilad vein. She then gets pregnant and has another child. Vatomer apam odeat Hashem. Now I will give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Al kein kara shmo Yehuda. She therefore called him Yehuda. Vata'amod miledet. And she stopped giving birth. Vatera Rachel. Now we switch gears. Now we switch the focus of the story. We change scenes. Vatera Rachel. Vatira Rachel, kilo yaldal Yaakov. She saw that she didn't give birth to Yaakov. Vatikane Rachel ba'achota. What new emotion do we have here? Jealousy. Kinah. Vatomer el Yaakov. And she says to Yaakov, Hava livanim. Give me children. Vim ayin, and if not, meita anochi, I'm better off dead. That's how bad it gets. And Yaakov, in what most Mefarshim assume is a moment of failure on his part, snaps back at his wife, Rachel. Vayichar af Yaakov v'Rachel, he gets angry at Rachel, vayomer ha'atachat elokim anochi. Am I instead of God? Asher manam imcha privaten, who's kept from you to give children? Leah had 4 kids. It's not my fault. You turn to God. This is on you. V'chule. Right? As we often, when we get to see, when we watch these children love stories in Hollywood, right? So they fall in love with each other, and then they pine for each other, and then eventually they finally get married, and in the older, cleaner movies, what happens then? You get fade to black at the wedding, and then it's all done. Right? Yaakov loves Rachel. They finally get to the chuppah. You really want to see an end scene, but we don't get an end scene. We get the rest of the story. And it's a story of hate. It's a story of jealousy. It's a story of pain. It's a story of strife that brings them to the point where Rachel is on the brink of no longer wanting to live. And where Yaakov doesn't even have the fortitude, at least in this moment, again, which the Mefarshim say was a moment of failure, where he snaps back at his barren wife for not being able to produce children. Very, very painful story. Very powerful story. Very problematic story. Where did all of this come from? Where did the sin'ah and the kin'ah and the pain, where did this all come from? What was the impetus? What was the cause? What was the source of all of this? Lavan. All of this came from Lavan. Lavan, who carefully choreographed the marriage of both of his daughters to Yaakov. That's the source. That's where it all came from. That's where it all started from. Sibling rivalry is not new, even in Chumash, even at this point. We're only seven parshas in. Where do we see sibling rivalry just before this? Yaakov and Esav fighting with each other every step of the way. But going back all the way to the first siblings in all of world history, say it again, Cain and Hevel. The first two siblings ever born were Cain and Hevel. And that doesn't end just with hatred or just with jealousy. It literally ends with one killing the other. Torah in some way implying that there's an inherent struggle that exists between siblings. Anybody who has siblings, probably that's not foreign to them. Hopefully none of you have felt the need to kill any of your siblings. And if you have, you've never acted upon it as Cain did with Hevel. But there is a sense that somehow there is an inherent tension and strife between siblings. And Lavan keys into this, and he sets Yaakov up for failure in uniting one person, not just with two wives, which the Torah implies that it frowns upon all the way in Devarim and Parshat Ki Teitzei. Remember the story of Eshet Yifat Tohar? Man goes out to war, falls in love, falls in lust with a woman. He's able to keep her in addition to the wife that he has. But the very next paragraph is, what happens if you have one wife that you love and one wife that you hate? What's the not so subtle hint? Don't marry two wives, because you will love one and hate the other. And the one that you hate, by the way, will always be the one that's based on a foundation of lust and not a foundation of love, parenthesis. And then the final chord of that three-paragraph blow at the beginning of Parshat Ki Teitzei is not, it's Ishtifat Toar, inheritance by the beloved son, or the son of the beloved wife versus the son of the not beloved wife. What's the third paragraph there? Ben Sorer Umorer. The poor child who is the product of that union, who is guaranteed to go off the derech in the worst possible way in that scenario, leads to his own death, which Chazal say may not probably. Did it say definitely? I think it's definitely. Definitely never happened. But the Torah clearly implying that marrying two wives at all is never a good idea. Kal v'chomer, Menosha kal v'chomer. Lavan sets up not just Yaakov with two wives. Yaakov's wives were sisters, planting the seeds for sin'ah and kin'ah. Inside, for the first time, inside the household of Klal Yisrael. We're not talking about post Chayit Adam HaRishon, post Eitz HaDaat, Kain and Hevel, Tov and Ra. We're not talking about an Esav versus Yaakov and who is going to be Klal Yisrael. We're not talking about within Klal Yisrael, Kin'ah and Sin'ah, jealousy and hatred, planted there by love. And it's not just within the household of Yaakov. It's far worse than that. Think about the psukim that we just read. How does that hatred and jealousy then actualize itself? In the children, and not just in the children, but in the names of the children that we've spoken about so many times over the course of Sefer Bereishit. A name always indicates an essence. And somehow embedded into the essence of these children are realities of this strife between Rachel and Leah. Hear the words again. Can you imagine? Can you imagine what the brisses must have sounded like for Yaakov when each one of the wives got up to make their speech postpartum? Can you imagine that? I'm trying to give you a more concrete visual of how painful this must have been. Can you imagine? Hear the words again as she names all of her children. As Leah names all of her children. Reuven, kira'ah Hashem be'onyi. Kiataya vani ishim. Shimon, kishama Hashem kisnu'a nochi. Levi ataha pami la ve'ishi elai. This hatred and jealousy becomes embedded into the fabric of their children, into their very names, which reflect their essence, and therefore is going to have to manifest itself within them as well. You had a hand up before we continue, Jessica.
The only thing is that with Reuben and Shimon, it's the implication that like Yaakov was like not present at like the birth or not because Leah like, names them, but then like with the change of the tense by baby, it implies that Yaakov was like there to meet his wife.
That's an important shot point. It doesn't change the more broad implications of the names of these children. Kisnu'ah Hashem, meaning like past tense, present tense. Embedded in Shimon is somehow, in addition to the hearing of the Kadosh Baruch Hu of Tfila, is this pain of Kisnu'ah Anochi. It's still part of his essence. Again, you must be drawn from a farshim in that instance. Yeah, because that's not indicated in the text. So yes, that could be true. It doesn't change the essence of the realities of these children.
So for Lavan to have all this in mind, he would have had to like think a lot about it. Do you think that this was like his intention or was like an added bonus? He was just like, oh, I might as well marry off both of my daughters.
What the reason why I wanted to start with Arami Oved Avi and Bikesh Lavan Lakor et Hakol is to show that this Bikesh Lavan Lakor et Hakol, he was looking to undermine everything. And Arami Lash Otiot Ramai, this is who he was. So Chazal are indicating to us that this was a calculated plan on Lavan's part. And we'll wrap it up at the end. We'll come back to just, again, that this was really all coming from Lavan and the threat that Lavan posed. We'll come back to that soon. But yes, I think it was absolutely intentional. I think that's what Chazal is bringing up. Now, when we actually look at the story of these children in this Parsha, what role do these children play in Parshat Vayetze? Basically, zero. There's the story with the Dudaim, which is a fascinating story in its own right. But basically zero. They're born. We sort of move past the whole giving birth to these children complicated piece. We then get to the fascinating psukim about spotted, speckled, and striped sheep, which actually is cosmically important. The deepest secrets of Torah are always held within the seemingly most irrelevant psukim. The beautiful, very, very deep Torahs that are brought down about that part of the Torah, but I'm shot, certainly it's difficult to get through on Shabbos morning. Then we finally get out of Lavan's house. Yaakov runs away and makes his way back to Eretz Yisrael. So not much of a rule. Where does the story about the children, where do these children actually begin to tell their story in Chumash?
Story
with Dina. So these children. Dina's story is there. It involves Shimon and Levi. But really the story of the kids. Story of Yosef. When we get to the story of Yosef, that's when we start to really discuss the interactions between these children. And wouldn't you know it, all of those seeds that were planted, I would say, and I think Chazal are indicating, by Lavan, through Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah, begin to sprout. Take a look at the beginning of Parshat Vayishev, which we're going to get to this semester, and we'll be talking about this a lot more. This Parsha is our foundation for everything that we're going to talk about over the course of the rest of the semester and the rest of Sefer Bereishit. Take a look at the first interactions between the children when we really get into the Parsha of the children. Source number 5, you can turn in your Chumashim to the beginning of Perek Vayeshev, Lamed Zayin Aleph. Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Migurei Aviv Be'eretz Kanaan. Yaakov settles in the land of the sojourning of his father in Eretz Kanaan. Eilat Hadot Yaakov, these are the generations, or rather the story of what Yaakov produces in the world. Yosef Ben Shvasrei Shana, Yosef is 17 years old. Haya Ro'et Achav. He was shepherding with his brothers, the Chuleng. Batzon, Vahu Na'ar et Bnei Bilhav et Bnei Zilpan, She'aviv, Ayvo Yosef et Ibatamra Ayel Avihem. And immediately, Yosef goes and in some way is telling stories about his brothers to his father. Okay, it doesn't sound great. Sounds like it could be problematic. V'Yisrael Ahavet Yosef Mikol Banav. Yisrael loved Yosef more than any of his other children. Sort of want to go look at Yaakov and be like, we've been down this road before. It didn't work last time either. Right? And just in case anybody was curious about it and didn't know, you know, if you ever fought with your siblings, who do your parents really love the most? Who's the favorite child? You didn't have to fight this time. There was actually a really brightly colored coat around the individual who was the most favorite child. Really clear. And the brothers saw that he was more beloved than all of the other brothers. What's our next word? What word manifests itself already? Back to that sin'ah. That sin'ah that was at the root of the production of these children now comes out through these children as well. Vayachalom Yosef chalom, and Yosef has a dream. Vayagid leachav, and he tells his brothers. Vayosifu lo od snoto, and they hated him even more once he told him that dream. We'll skip the dream itself. Pasuchet vayomru lo echav hamloch simloch alino. Do you really think you're going to rule over us? Say the brothers. Imasholkim sholban. Are you really going to rule over us? Vayosifu od snoto. Al chalomotav v'al dvarav. They hated him even more because of his dreams and because of his words. And then, for the sake of time, skipping forward, pasuk yud aleph, the last one on your source sheets, on source number 5. Vayikneu vo echav v'aviv shamar et hadavar. What word also appears there now? Kinah. The second that we get to, and again, there are moments of stories about certain children between now and Parshat Vayeshev. Dina, Shimon and Levi. Is there another story that I can't remember? What? The Dudaim, right? The Dudaim with Reuven. But when we really get to the story of these children that focuses on them as a group, the beginning of Parshat Vayeshev, it immediately begins with Sin'an Kin'ah, those seeds that were planted earlier on at the very moment of their birth. I do think Lavan did this intentionally, Shane. I do think Lavan did this intentionally. Lavan bikesh la'akor et hakol. Para wanted for all of the Jewish boys to be killed and thrown into the Nile. That's a physical destruction of half of the Jewish population. Lavan wanted something far more deep than that. He didn't want an outside antagonist to come and physically destroy the Jews. He wanted to corrupt the Jewish people from the inside out. The enemy within is always more dangerous than the enemy without. We are our own worst enemy. We can fight all of the oppressors in the world, and 2,000 years of Jewish history has taught us that we can overcome any external threat. We may have a Beit HaMikdash, we may lose a Beit HaMikdash. We may have Eretz Yisrael, we may lose Eretz Yisrael. We may go through death, we may go through horrors, we may go through holocausts. We will endure the external threats of the outside world and of the four galiot that we are destined to be underneath. But what will keep us down, what threatens our very existence, what could uproot us at the source, Lavan b'keish la'akor et akol, is to plant disharmony and worse, sin'ah and kin'ah within the context of Klal Yisrael. That's the most dangerous threat we face. We live in exile right now. From which Beit HaMikdash? Good, some of you are still alive. Good. Second Beit HaMikdash. What is the cause of the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash? Sinaskina.
This is what we're struggling with.
These issues could not be more practical. These aren't ancient issues. These aren't hints in the text of things that we need to uncover. Sin'an, kin'ah, sinaskinam is the most primary issue that we are still dealing with for the last 2,000 years with the destruction of the second Beit HaMikdash. Murder, adultery, and idolatry cost us 70 years of exile. Infighting, sinaskinam, we're still going 2,000 years later. This is the struggle embedded into the formation of Klal Yisrael itself. The sin'ah and the kin'ah, what we're referring to as this sinas kinam, that we see rampant in the world, in America, in the context of Eretz Yisrael. The clear struggle to understand, to connect with, to be compassionate, to simply not hate another Jew for being different, for not seeing the world the same way, to not look down on another Jew for wearing different clothing, for davening in a different nusach, for being born in a different location. Sinas chinam is what's still keeping us apart today. The effects of what Lavan caused, the rotten roots that he planted, are still affecting us to this day. Lavan b'keish la'akor et akol. And the struggle of Jewish history, as embodied by the 12 children of Yaakov, by the 12 Shvatim, on a level of Maaseh Avot Siman Labanim, one of our key phrases of Sefer Bereshit. Everything that happens in the context of the Avot is going to play out with the children. Everything that happens in the context of the Shvatim is a miniature, is a prerequisite, is a setting of the stage, the planting of the seeds for everything that we're going to go through. What is it that needs to be accomplished throughout the rest of Sefer Bereshit? Can the Shvatim overcome this Sin'ah and Kin'ah and harmonize or not? Can they live up to Yaakov's Midah of Tiferet, of harmony, of balance, of unifying or not? That's going to be the struggle of the children of Yaakov, of the Shvatim, throughout the rest of Sefer Bereshit. As a prerequisite, as a maaseh avot siman labanim for what we as the Jewish people are going to go through throughout all of history. And as is always the case, the end is always hinted to at the beginning. We talked about how, what is the embodiment, what is the object in this world that is the embodiment of the 12 Shvatim that we talked about last time? We suggested that. On a more pshat level, that was the primary discussion of last year.
Stones.
Avanim, av ben relationships. At the beginning of the parsha, Yaakov Inu comes and he takes from the Avnei HaMakom, he takes those Avanim and he puts them under his head, where he has a dream of Beit HaMikdash, where he has a dream of the world in its perfect state, humanity in its perfect state, world in its perfect state, as we've discussed in the last two shiurim. That's the dream that he has. According to Chazal, how many stones does he take? 12. Indicative of the 12 shvatim, the 12 avanim that he is going to produce. And as the Midrash picks up on it, is explicit in the Psukim, when Yaakov wakes up after seeing a dream of the world in its place of perfection, what does he find under his head? One stone. Source number 6, the beginning of our parsha, Perakav Chet Pasuk Yuchet, Vayashkim Yaakov Boker Veikach Et Ha'Evin Asher Sam Meirashotav. He takes the stone, singular, which he put under his head. Say Chazal that those 12 stones over the course of that night, they all fought to be under Yaakov's head, but instead they all merged together and became one. That's going to be the journey that Klal Yisrael need to accomplish in order to achieve Yaakov's vision of a perfect humanity, of a perfect world, of a reality of true Beit HaMikdash. It's for Yaakov to go out and build those Avbein relationships, produce those foundation stones, but then those foundation stones have to harmonize to build that bayit. And if they can harmonize and build that bayit, we get Beit HaMikdash. And if not, well, then we get Churban. And a lot of what we're going to talk about over the course of the rest of Sefer Bereshit, over the course of the rest of the semester, is seeing the tensions between these avanim, between these banim, between these shvatim, and seeing if and how they can achieve a state of harmony. Bezrat Hashem, we should see a harmony achieved throughout the context of all of Klal Yisrael in our days. Through that, see the avanim that are Klal Yisrael come together to build the foundation for Beit HaMikdash, and see that Beit HaMikdash be built speedily and in our days.